presents the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Julie Keel, and with me today is Jeff Sayer.
Hello, everybody.
And Mike McPeak.
Hi.
And this week, first off, 2 weeks in a row, woo-hoo, 2016 is starting off at least a little better than the end of 2015. Yay us. But we're going to be talking about Gattaca. And quick synopsis of it is Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, and Alan Arkin, and Jude Law, as well as Ernest Borgnine and Gore Vidal, star in this engrossing sci-fi thriller about an all-too-human man who dares to defy a system obsessed with genetic perfection. Hawke stars as Vincent as an invalid who assumes the identity of a member of the genetic elite to pursue his goal of traveling into space with the Gattaca Aerospace Corporation. However, a week before his mission, a murder marks Vincent as a suspect, and with a relentless investigator in pursuit and the colleague he has fallen in love with beginning to suspect his deception, Vincent's dreams steadily unravel. This was really cool in my estimation. It was kind of artsy-fartsy a little bit, you know. It wasn't like a Michael Bay, you know, pyrotechnic thriller and a lot of action stuff. But it did get, it had a little bit of the kind of suspense thing going where it was like, oh, you know, you're kind of starting to bite your fingernails a little bit.
Well, then it also, the style of it reminded me, and I had to go back and look up which movie it was, the one In Time, where time is a commodity. They used some of the cars, you know, that kind of the suits. And, you know, I thought it was kind of, at the end of the movie, they're dressed in like, you know, three-piece suits or whatever, and they go into space. I mean, you know, they wear astronaut suits in the space. They just get on this rocket in spacesuits and take off. So, but it's that kind of style that, you know, turbine cars or, you know, electric turbine cars or whatever they were, you know, because they all hummed. They didn't, nobody roared or anything, but they was cars from like the 60s. And I think they, In Time used the same sort of style. It's some way of having an indiscriminate future, because they said at the beginning it was what? In the near future. Near future, right.
Yeah, the cars were interesting. We can just jump off right there.
I think they did this movie in like a film noir style. So like the whole kind of mood of the whole film is like maybe the late 40s or early 50s, including the way they dress, the makeup the women are wearing and their hair.
True.
Like so there's an awful lot They went out of their way to make the look of this film look like an old film, and then the technology they used was all super high tech. So they really worked to kind of – like this movie's almost timeless because of that, because it's not anchored to any specific time because it's completely out of any realistic setting, right?
True. Yeah, and it really was kind of an interesting – I didn't think about it that way until you said it, but it was like going back to the future.
Yeah.
Because there were things that were very much throwback-ish, like you say, the clothing and the cars. And even the – kind of the workroom, I mean, it was almost like it was very futuristic, the office space that they were in. It was kind of very futuristic, but at the same time, it was kind of very reminiscent of like a 1940s newspaper room. You know, everybody gets a desk, and you're all lined up in a row, and you just, you know, you do your work at your desk. There were no cubicles. There were no, you know, there weren't really even any windows. I mean, it was just very...
This movie is like loaded with symbolism.
Yes.
The whole movie, top to bottom. The spiral staircase at his house was like a DNA strand.
Yep.
Like if you see the movie poster, you can't not see that. Like they're running down it, and it looks like a DNA strand with all the bars across it. And did you guys notice that the only time when people display any emotion in this movie is when they're telling the truth? When he's at work and when everybody's interacting, everybody's like a robot. And then as soon as they kind of he breaks that and he starts talking to like Jude Law's character, and they come and they start talking the truth, then they have emotion again. Uma Thurman's character has no emotion. She's like a robot until he has to sort of reveal himself to her, and then she starts having emotion. Yeah, like
as if genetic perfection, which is the underlying, you know, theme of this movie too,
it dehumanizes
requires you to absolutely separate yourself from yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they're pretty darn sure of their technology there, because supposedly Ethan Hawke's character was supposed to die at 30.2 years of age, and I don't know, did they ever state what his real age was?
They didn't, but you got the impression that he was either fast approaching that or, you know, was...
He told her he was 10,000 beats over, so...
Okay.
Which sounds impressive, but it's only like, I think that I read somewhere that 10,000 beats is like a couple days, or, you know, no more than a month. I don't remember the exact figure, but yeah, I mean, it sounds awful. You know, that sounds like a big figure, but really it's not that many, considering that the heart beats, you know, 60 times a minute. Somebody do the math and, you know, figure it out. But so, yeah, apparently he was over. And, you know, the whole idea was that with this, you know, genetics program was that they were going to select the, you know, you could have a natural child, but why, you know, conceive the old-fashioned way, but why would you want to do that when you could have this, you know, supposedly genetically engineered or genetically, did they ever say perfect, but they were certainly genetically engineered for the best qualities.
Yeah, I think they pretty much said perfect, at least a couple of times, and maybe not with, like, every conception, but the character, oh boy, how are we going to call these two? Jude Law's character, and for those who haven't seen the movie, Jude Law, what happens is Ethan Hawke, because he's an invalid, needs to assume the identity of somebody who's valid, who's genetically perfect, who's been picked from birth to participate in the space program. He was an elite. But that person, Jude Law's character, got injured and therefore paralyzed, I believe, and so was no longer able to pursue that. And so there's this black market of trading identities. So you had a valid who couldn't follow his destiny and an invalid who wanted to prove that his destiny was beyond what was delegated to him at birth. And so they made a deal to switch. And so, yeah, it's... Jude Law's character was... you know, they used the word perfection when they described him, that his genetics were perfect.
Right.
But
the thing is, he came in second in the Olympics, and apparently this was so devastating to him that later on in the movie he admits that he walked out in front of that car because he just didn't think that, you know, he hadn't lived up to his perfection, and so therefore he thought, I don't know if he was trying to kill himself or if he just felt that he should be injured somehow.
Which is interesting, because the pressure on both ends of the spectrum is pretty crushing. I mean, that's evidence throughout the movie. Matter of fact, spoiler!
like we haven't spoiled it already.
Right, yeah. Jude Law's character at the end, Ethan Hawke, the guy who was assuming the identity, he was an invalid and was assuming the identity of a valid, actually does make it into space through a number of twists and turns. Jude Law's character, who was the valid person, commits suicide at the end. So talk about two people who basically took their genetic disposition, you know, the fate that was, the destiny that was given to them at birth, and turned it on its head. It worked for both of them that way.
Well, and, you know, even though it wasn't said in here, I kind of got I started thinking about the idea of, you know, well, religion, basically, that, you know, religion teaches that, you know, man is imperfect and through God you can become perfect. But, you know, there is some people that think man can ultimately perfect himself. And I think that's what I was kind of seeing here. And I think this movie kind of said that you can try as hard as you want, but you're never going to entirely perfect the human being. We're always going to have flaws. And the people who we think are, you know, in this case, invalid, if they work hard enough, can, you know, exceed their potential. And these people who have potential, who have supposedly have all the potential that they need, don't always live up to it. So I kind of took away from that that, you know, there is, no matter how hard we try to perfect the human, state, we're never going to achieve that.
Yeah, and that's... Well,
the movie's kind of making the point that we will achieve it, but that we shouldn't.
Well, or what? Look at the results you get. I mean, yeah, they thought they had achieved it, but I mean, even still, like, you know, Jude Law's character was supposed to be perfection, but he didn't, you know, he only got second in the Olympics, and, you know, not most people would be happy with that, but, you know, he didn't live up to what he thought was his perfection. And, you know, it's just that no matter... You know, how hard you try to tinker with things, it all comes down to the fact that we're all individuals.
Well, it's back to that whole predestination thing, too. You know, is your fate, is your destiny determined by your birth? And in this case, it's by your genes. Or do you have a certain amount of free will that pushes you beyond what your genes would say you're capable of doing, or, you know, your destiny, you know, at birth determines that you're capable of doing. So
like, this movie tries to make the statement that certainly everybody else believes that everything is all wrapped up in your genes, and Ethan Hawke's character doesn't believe that, and he's making the point that he can, you know, he can kind of bust out of that. And I think the truth is probably, you know, probably closer to what he's saying. Like, it's all that the nature versus nurture thing, and they're saying, the society in this movie is saying that nature is everything, that nurture has absolutely nothing to do with it. Like, which that in itself, okay, obviously it's a very legitimate question as to, you know, which one plays a bigger role or how even they are and all that. But to say that nurture has nothing to do with it, like you're just preordained from birth as to when you're going to die, that's, you know, kind of patently ridiculous.
Yeah, except the, you know.
Well, I was going to say it's not a new idea because we have you have several royal families, you know, that have, because of their birth, they think they are, you know, predestined to, you know, rule over the country or whatever, you know, it happens to be.
So I'm not saying stuff like that. I'm saying that your whole kind of mortality is wrapped up from the time you're almost conceived, and that doesn't make any sense at all. Like, certainly, I'm not saying it. There's no influence. Like, it obviously plays a major influence, but there's so many factors that play into it. Like, we all like to. Malcolm Gladwell's book Outliers is really good. It talks about how we like to tell ourselves a story that these great people, like you know, these people that outperform even the other elite people, like
Thomas Edison,
yeah. Bill Gates, Wayne Gretzky,
yeah.
You know, these people that are outliers, even in among the elites, right? That they are just picked themselves up by their bootstraps and they did it themselves. And the more you look at it, like, yes, they were given a whole bunch of the nature things. Like, they were, you know, like Wayne Gretzky was born with, you know, a tremendous set of genes, but he was born in this family where his dad created this environment to create the, like, a super hockey player, right?
Right, yep.
You know, Bill Gates was in this weird opportunity where he, as a kid, he had access to a mainframe computer on almost unlimited time in a situation that almost nobody else in the world had a similar, you know, ability. And it just gave him a leg up that almost nobody else on Earth had at that time. And it's just... But we tell ourselves these stories that, oh, these are people are self-made. And the closer you look at it, like, they started out with the tools that they needed. And certainly it's not like they just kind of sat back. Like, they took advantage of it, but they're not totally self-made. Like, they had to do a lot of work, right? Well, it's like people always say, You look at a couple that's like an elderly couple that have been married for 50 years, and people act like that, oh, it's like just destiny. No, those people had to work hard at that relationship, and it didn't go good all the time. Like, but we just tell ourselves, we love the story, the movie story of how, especially like with love, like, oh, it's destiny. Well, that's a bunch of crap. You know, these people work hard at relationships.
Yeah, and I think this movie kind of plays into that, and I think it kind of plays into the nurture part too, because once you've got that nature, you know, you had your genes analyzed the moment of birth, you know, everything's – then you wound up going into certain – like programs. You got that environment where you could be go to space, or you could be in the Olympics, or you could be, you know, whatever else. I don't think those are the only two that were really mentioned. So, you know, but which reminds me of, you know, of Soviet Olympics. You know, let's go scour the country for, you know, 3-year-olds that show some sort of aptitude, and then let's put them in an environment to pull every ounce of talent out of them to their detriment, you know, to the exclusion of everything else in their life, to push them as far as you can. You know, that's a yeah. thing that's, you know, this movie takes to an extreme, I think. It's not, and I don't want to use the word trope. It's not a trope. It's a debate. It's a topic. It's
yeah.
a matter of discussion and experiment and research, I think, you know, and we don't have the answer. But that's the value of this movie. The beauty of this movie is that it takes it to the extreme and shows what could happen at that extreme.
Yeah, look, to me, this is what science fiction is best at. Like,
yep.
they, yeah, this is really, really good. Like, they take something that kind of is on the horizon, and they kind of pick it apart and show you the you know, the dystopian future of taking it to an extreme, and how awful that is, and how innocent it looks to start. Like,
right.
like, 'cause this is, you know, really this is going on right now. Like,
what?
People do in utero tests and find out that they have a child with a genetic, or it's not a child yet, like have a pregnancy, and there's a genetic problem, and, you know, people have abortions based on that.
Well, and the whole
and it's, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm saying that, you know, it's a decision that the couple makes, and
yeah,
it's being done today.
That's right? It. And so is some of this thing about, you know, like sperm donors and whatever. You know, do you want a tall person or an IQ or blue eyes or brown eyes or whatever? Those discussions are going on right now. Those choices are out there. And so this movie begins like that. It begins with a child being born through the natural, you know, which is completely strange, and why would people want to do that? Which is, you know, at least that's the way it's presented in the movie. So, of course, their next child, they go through normal channels and, you know, choose exactly the attributes they want. And the process of doing that and the people involved with that just, I mean, that would be normal. Why would you not want to choose gender, eye color, IQ, you know, whatever else was on the list? Because, you know, why would you not want to give your child the best start in life, you know, type of thing? So that becomes, I mean, it's quite easy to make the argument that that's normal.
Yeah, and I guess I would say the reason why you would want to have it the natural way is because, I don't know, I'd like to be surprised.
Yeah, you know, and there's a difference between, you know, like nowadays, it's if you actually don't want to know the gender of your child before it's born, that is a very hard thing to do these days. Sure, you can request that, but the x-ray technicians and the nurses and whatever, there's so many things that happen before birth that, you know, over the course of 9 months, it seems like somebody slips up somewhere to, you know, hint at one way or the other. It is getting to be quite difficult to have a birth these days and not know the gender of the baby before it's born. And so that becomes again, you know, the norm. There was a time when that was, you know, you didn't know until, you know, the day of. You couldn't buy stuff, and then you couldn't buy pink or blue, because apparently that's important, until the day the child was born, because you didn't know for sure. Whereas now people deck out their nurseries, you know, 5 months in advance, because they know exactly what's coming.
Well, and I would like, you know, this movie didn't need to do it, but I would like to explore this world that these people live in, because it just occurred to me, who decides what's, what's valid, what's invalid, what's perfection, and are there corporations, because they focused on the going to the moon part, but I mean, are there corporations out there determining that, well, we need this for our workforce?
Okay, let's go there too, because there was a scene in here where the young child, the invalid young child, was attempting to go to daycare, and they could not find a daycare that would take this child, because what if he fell? What if, you know, the risk is too much? Our insurance won't cover it. And boy, is that real close to, today too, where, you know, you have to go to the doctor before you can get insurance, and your employer wants to have control of your insurance, and your employer can decide to pay for your insurance or not based on whether you smoke or exercise or whatever. And so that connection between employer and insurer and what you can and can't do seems to get tighter and tighter. And, you know, the idea that by taking a DNA test these days, you find out you're predisposed to whatever thing you might be predisposed to, can limit your choices or affect your insurance rates or whatever. That's just barely fiction. And I'm not 100% certain it is. I mean, it's real close to what's going on with some of that stuff right now today, at least in America. Everybody else in the world, you know, decides that people are people and they deserve health care, but, you know.
Yeah. And like, well, don't want to get too much into politics, but, like, that's why in Canada and most of the other, you know, G7 countries other than the States, like, we share the risk, right? So people have, you know, whatever issues that would, now, before you guys had Obamacare, that would have caused people to have these pre-existing things and have them real problems getting in health insurance. But we just spread the risk among the whole population in Canada, and it comes out of our taxes. So,
right. Yeah. Which, in terms of Gattaca, you know, that whole, it's a very American film, apparently. There was, like, if you were one of the valids, you were essentially genetic engineered, then you're fine. You can do whatever, you know, you want. But if you decided to go that strange route and just, you know, take things by chance and became an invalid, then, well, you know, we don't know about you people. You're kind of weird. So,
well, yeah, and all they were seemed to be able to do was to be janitors. And pardon me, I was slightly offended by that. but yeah, that did, you know, and like I say, it would be kind of interesting to explore this world, outside of this movie here, because, you know, I'm just picturing that these corporations have gotten together and say, we need people of this type, so they are the ones that are determining what, you know, is valid, what's invalid, so that they can create their workforce. And then whatever's left over gets the people who don't quite fit their criteria, they get the menial jobs of the world.
You know, and let's just put that out there, too. This movie is very, very narrow in its scope. There are two sets. Basically, there's the work, there's the office, where the people are working on the space program, you know, and then there's the home. And that was it. There was no other people that we really... I mean, there were a couple other scenes. I get that, yeah. But, you know, very much it was everything at the office or in the home. And there wasn't a very broad picture of the society. It was very much this person and this job, and how that, you know, played out. So Gattaca does not present an entire world view, an entire universe, that we understand. It just takes a very small corner of it, which I get. I mean, the name Gattaca kind of got me going. It's like it's barely mentioned in the movie at all. The space program is Gattaca, and it actually comes from the film's title is based on the first letters of guanine, adenine, thymine, and cytosine. And I'm mispronouncing all of these.
Yes.
The four nucleobases of DNA. See, I haven't been in science class for too long.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that it was actually originally titled The Eighth Day. Because on 7 days, you know, God created the earth, but on the eighth day, you know, apparently we perfected ourselves and went off into space. And that's the other thing, too. This guy is gunning the whole movie. Talk about narrow scope. This guy is gunning the whole movie. He is risking everything to get to the space program. We know nothing about the space program. They go to space. I don't know what they do up there. I don't know if they're military. I don't know if they're explorers. I don't know if they're miners. We don't know anything. The only thing we know is, like you mentioned, they get into their launch craft and in suits.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it seems like they're sending rockets off. It almost seemed hourly or several times a day. They never said where. But they only had one shot at going to, was it Titan?
Yeah. And they were talking about, there was one mention in there, something about a very small window that happens only like 7 days over 70 years or something, which is why this murder investigation that was going on was at the most inconvenient time. And spoiler, the guy who got murdered, nobody cared about and would have, you know, everybody just wanted it left. It's like the guy's dead. Who cares? Whatever. We got space missions to do. So, you know, so it was just this one or two investigators that kept pursuing it. It's an interesting world. I mean, it's a very interesting world that's portrayed in this movie. This is one of those movies that's going to make you think for a while.
Well, yeah. Were you guys caught off guard when it turned out that the detective was Ethan Hawke's brother?
Yeah.
Did that seem kind of out of left field? I mean, I realize they were estranged. I haven't seen each other in years, but wouldn't you sort of recognize your brother at some point?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. Just wondering.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any siblings, and I haven't been out of touch with any siblings for 30 years. So,
right.
Or but 20 years. Yeah, no, I don't think so. Although, I don't know. Siblings are not. I had a friend from school that I ran into not too long ago, and really, I had a hard time recognizing them. Once they told me who they were, then I figured it out. But, yeah, no, you know, It took a while to, it's like, is that okay? I see it now. So maybe that's possible.
It's possible. And, you know, I get the feeling, like I said, they didn't explore a lot of things in there, but I get the feeling that the family unit, or at least in the case of this family, wasn't a very strong, strong.
Yeah, I mean, okay, spoiler again here too. You know, the two brothers growing up were rivals. Like always, and of course the younger one who was genetically engineered was always besting the older one who was the invalid. There was just this one time when that changed, where the older brother, the invalid, had to rescue the younger brother, the engineered brother, from drowning. Spoiler, and that changed everything. And he walked away. He left the family at that point. So that was his choice because he basically figured out that he was not limited by his genes. He could do, you know, what he could take himself as far as he could take himself. And he wanted the chance to do it, and he couldn't do that within his family, so he just walked away. So there's, beyond that, there's not much about the family, whether or not the, you know, the parents were upset about that or you know, whatever. I mean, he just walked away. And of course, it's the story of that person who walked away, so you don't really see the story of the people who were left behind.
Well, and again, this raises another question. Again, I'd like to you know, explore this world, because Jeff kind of said it you know, at the beginning there. You said, how'd you say it, when they didn't show emotion until they were
Until they were truthful.
Yeah.
And truthful, yeah. And so I've just started to wonder, what's relationships like? Is there real love, or are you trying to find a mate based upon your genetic makeup so you have the – because they said they can sit there and engineer things, but it doesn't sound like they can pull stuff out of thin air necessarily.
Well, a movie like this, because it's so stylized and the film noir and stuff, like they're not really trying to present a realistic world, right? They're trying to get across ideas. And I think the point of the whole truthfulness is we need not randomness, but like we need everybody. And if you start screening out, if you start screening human beings, you're going to create these robots. It's not going to be beneficial if we genetically engineer ourselves so everybody's super pretty and everybody thinks the same. Like, my sister's a human resources person for a bank, and she was saying that a few months ago one team was hiring somebody new, and so they submit the like the resumes to her, and normally human resources just rubber stamps it, but she goes through them and she goes back to the team leader and she says, I think you need to look at some minority people. And the guy just rolls his eyes like, oh, yeah, well, you know, kind of human resources people who are bothering me. And her point when she was telling me is like, look, you guys are all white guys who all went to the same schools. Like, that's not healthy for the organization, because you guys all think the same. Mm-hmm. And you need to get somebody who's outside of your little box, like a woman or you know, ethnic minority, or somebody who's been somewhere else and thinks differently than you do, because that makes you better. And the same thing with the NFL. They had the coaching crisis a few years ago where, you know, 70% of the players, I'm pulling this number up, but maybe 70% of the players are black, and all of the senior coaches except for one or two are white. So they just said, okay, you need to start every time you're interviewing for a senior coaching position, you need to interview at least one minority. And there was some complaints at the time. Well, now there's a bunch of head coaches that are black. There's a whole pile of, you know, senior offensive and defensive coordinators that are black. They didn't hire those guys out of pity. They interviewed those guys because, okay, we got to interview these guys. And then they find out during the interview, oh, this is the guy we really need, right?
Right.
And it's – but – and I don't think it's racism. It's just like you have this mindset of like, well, I need somebody that's – you know, I know how to do this, so I should hire somebody that's like me.
Yeah, the developer community gets dinged for that quite a bit, because they call it we need somebody who fits into our company culture.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, right.
I think it's kind of like this movie. Like, it's not – you don't – it's kind of insidious, because you don't set out to do something evil, but it kind of ends up working out that way, right?
Right. Yeah, and there's so many places where the fallacy of sameness, or the risk of sameness, is – just been proven time and time again. I mean, evolution will do that. You know, farming, you plant all one crop, and America, elm trees. We planted elm trees everywhere. Then Dutch elm disease came along. Guess what? We had no trees anymore, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many examples of that. And even in, I was going to say science or engineering or research or whatever, medical advances, a lot of the advances, technology, whatever, these days are coming from essentially cross-pollinization between fields. Finnish carpenter goes and watches somebody in the medical field, you know, do something, and then pretty soon, you know, we've got a whole new device that can save lives, you know, I don't know. So, or vice versa, suddenly carpentry tools get a lot more advanced because, you know, those things the doctors were using looked a whole lot like stuff they could use too. So, that's one thing that in Gattaca, that just doesn't happen. I mean, and you get the picture that these are a very, these people live in bubbles, you know. the space people hang out with the space people, and the invalids hang out with the invalids. There was kind of like the under the bridge place where the invalids, you know, like the homeless invalids were living when they were looking for the murderer. They just kind of, you know, went to this place where they were all hanging out.
Well, and like there's strength and diversity, and I think that's one of the things that they're showing is that there's so little diversity in their society that they have this murderer, and the first thing they do is like, oh, here's the one guy. It's, you know, it's like Sesame Street. Here's the one that doesn't belong, so he must be the murderer.
Right.
Well, that's stupid.
Right.
Like, they spend the whole movie just assuming this guy's the murderer, not really doing any police work at all until right at the end when he actually starts to take a closer look at the body.
Right.
Like, they really hadn't even investigated the murder.
Yep.
And it was just because, oh, okay, we just go and, you know, find out, like, It was the simplest thing. Like, okay, well, who's the one person that's genetically inferior to the rest of us? Oh, hey, we found one. He must be the murderer.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
blame
I think
it.
I think they put such faith in their system because at one point they towards the beginning there, when he's starting to assume this other guy's identity, he said, you know, I don't look exactly like you. And he says, that's okay. All you have to do is put the you have the genetic material, the DNA or whatever there. That is what verifies you, not the way you look, not the way you act.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, his job interview was peeing in a cup. They didn't even ask him a question. It's like,
well, that was another one of the people that doctor. He doesn't show any emotion at all until at the very end,
mm-hmm.
when you find out that he's been aware the whole time that Ethan Hawke was an imposter. And once they're truthful with each other, that's when they smile and they, you know, they have this emotional exchange.
I mean, how cold would it have to be to live in that type of world? I mean, you would have to be on your guard constantly, even if you were doing nothing wrong, even if you were just playing along with everything the way it was, because, you know, to some extent, Uma Thurman's character, that's exactly what she was doing. She was, you know, just trying to survive in that culture. And
And he was like, that was part of the exchange between them. She felt that she was inferior to everyone, and he was telling her, no, you're not. Like, you're just as good as anybody else. Just because you have what's been determined as a genetic weakness doesn't make you an inferior person.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you talk about, I mean, it's like, well, it is race. It's exactly like racism. I mean, people are born of, they look certain ways, they have certain skin color or whatever, and we discriminate based on it. There's not a damn thing they can do about it. Not one freaking damn thing. And so this movie does the same thing, except with genetics. You know, you're born with these genes, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it until you, and the movie finds the one little gray, you know, black market area where they do try and you know, find a way around that. So it's an interesting movie on so many levels. It's pretty movie too. I mean, it's just it's striking. The visuals are striking. They are distinctive and sci-fi-y, as like you were saying, as well as being like back to the kind of retro Art Deco type stuff, even a little bit. So it is a stunning visual movie on top of a really thoughtful one as well. And I think I read somewhere that even the score for the movie, the music, got some award. So it's good on a lot of levels.
On the positive side of this topic, if anybody listens to How Stuff Works, or sorry, the podcast Stuff You Should Know from the How Stuff Works people, they just did a podcast a couple weeks ago called How Personalized Medicine Works, which is talking about things that are coming, about how, you know, you can one of the examples they use is they fully expect within the next few years that you'll be able to buy like toilets that would genetically sequence your urine as you pee into it, and it'll be able to tell you, like, if you need your insulin, if you're a diabetic or whatever, because sequencing the human genome has come down so much in price, and that it's getting more and more and more common. And they said we'll probably get to a point where we're tracking that stuff almost daily.
We were just having this conversation about clothing. What happens when your clothing can start tracking, you know, your heartbeat and your respiration and your sweat and, you know, the other things that they're able to track through skin. And that is consistently, you know, it's a telemetry feed to someplace. That whole constant surveillance or constant monitoring like that, you know, benign or otherwise.
I think that it was in one of the reviews that I read, they mentioned this about Gattaca, and they were saying that Gattaca shows you the most negative side of that kind of world, right? Whereas on the positive side, what you need is protection for that information, like in the same way that we try and protect all this other information. That monitoring that stuff yourself, like if you had like a Fitbit that constantly monitored your vital signs, and you had like an app to connect on your phone, and that you're going into the doctor, so you could just email them, okay, I'm going to be there later today. Here's the last 2 weeks of my, like my bio information.
Right.
That would be incredibly helpful.
It would.
Right?
Yep.
But that you managing that information yourself between you and your healthcare professionals, that information is being used in a far, far different way than we see in this movie, right?
Right. Yeah. That's just it. That's always it. That's the point of everything. Is that it's like fire. It's a tool. It can be used for good or evil, depending upon how it's done. So.
I think sci-fi is so great, and this is like such a good example of that, because it shows you this dystopian future, and it makes you think about like the ramifications of going down that path, and how something that might seem benign, if you follow it to one logical conclusion, like, oh, okay, we need to be more careful than we're being with this stuff and reproductive technology and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that's what sci-fi is good for, is to explore the extremes to some extent. You know, this one pushes it off one direction. It's like, okay, if everything bad happens, you could have a world like this. How are we going to prevent a world like this from becoming reality? I mean, these are the consequences of that. Do we like that or don't we? If we don't like that, what are we going to put in place to make sure we don't go there? You know, so I think that's these types of, sci-fi gets you thinking about that and starts those conversations to help, guide that discussion and, I suppose eventually policy.
Well, and I think you start looking at that, and that's going to open up a whole can of worms for legal matters, ethical matters.
It's totally.
We can't go backwards in time, and I don't know that going backwards is necessarily simpler or better, but sometimes I look forward at what some of the potential for the things that we're doing, and I don't think it frightens me, but it does concern me.
You do wonder how it's all going to play out, don't you?
Right.
It's like, this looks like it's getting kind of gnarly, and
Well, it's like when Alfred Nobel developed dynamite. He thought it was going to be the way to end, wars, if I remember the story right, basically. But basically, it went on to make bigger, better wars. The things that we develop today that we think are going to be a panacea of some sort, do they end up being more cancerous than they are helpful?
Yeah, and we don't know. And as much as we, as a species, do all these things that, on the surface, are kind of frightening. You know what? Normal everyday life is still kind of normal.
Well, yeah, and I think it boils down to the fact that it's not the technology we should be worried about. We have to look at ourselves as individuals and as a society and see what our morals and ethics are and make sure that they are the best that we can be, and then kind of let science and everything else follow suit. Because, like I say, any of this stuff can be used for good or ill. So I think it's more, everybody freaks out about all the technology and everything that we're doing, but I think we need to be more concerned about, as a society, what's our beliefs? What do we consider, sacred? What do we consider important? And we have to really, really look at that. And I think that's what's going to determine our future more so than technology is going to.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of debate, and it's a can of worms. Gattaca is awesome because it does, it takes a can of worms and lines the worms up, and
like we said, it's a very narrow slice, but then from that narrow slice you start thinking about the other things that we've kind of thrown out here, and it does make you think.
Yeah, well, one thing that we haven't mentioned as far as technology goes yet, as far as I can remember, is all of the things that were in place for identity confirmation. I mentioned the guy got his job because he peed in a cup. Basically they proved that he had the genes to do the space program. There was a blood test. They pricked your finger every time you went into the building, and I'm like, really? We didn't see retina scans. We didn't see fingerprint stuff going here. It was all body fluids. Matter of fact, one of the things that they did as they were pursuing the murder investigation is, after pricking a bunch of people's fingers, several times actually, only later did they decide, that's not good enough. Now we want blood straight out of their veins. There's this whole everything, try having to prove who you were time and time and time and time again. Everything was dependent upon your genes. It wasn't that you could be recognized walking into the office building, good morning, sir, glad to see you back again today. It was like, no, prick your finger and prove you are who you are. There was, like I say, many layers of that identity protection or identity confirmation that were everywhere.
And, it's one of those things you probably don't want to poke the science too much here, but the system they had in place seemed, I won't say it was easily defeated, but, it took some effort for them to do it, but, it was defeated. And, he strapped a urine bag in there and faked it when he went in to give the urine sample. Would they at some point check to see if he had something?
Yeah, would you not frisk people?
Yeah.
Nowhere was anybody being frisked.
Right.
Yeah.
I just want to point something out. You know how you said that this movie was kind of reminded you of In Time?
Right.
It's the same director.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I didn't realize that.
Okay, that would explain a lot then. Yeah, because like I say, the same sort of style. And
it did have that same, yeah, you're right.
And I don't remember a lot of the movies we did, but that one stuck with me. I think because it was the cars and they were 60s cars for the most part, but they had electric motors and everything in them. And I think that's what stuck with me. It was just the kind of uniqueness of that. But, they were all black. I don't remember seeing any, real colorful cars in there. I think, they painted the whole, you said, film noir. It was painted kind of bleak and dark and dreary, so there wasn't a lot of color in there anywhere, so that was the mood they were trying to set.
This is a good movie. It came out in 97, and I guess I must have just missed this one when it came out, and it's not one, I'd heard a lot of buzz about it. Wasn't like Minority Report, where it gets mentioned every third time you talk about sci-fi or that kind of stuff, but this is a gem. It really is.
Yeah. Really, there's not really much negative you can say about it. I'm not a fan of Ethan Hawke as an actor, but I think he was really good in this. Mm-hmm. And I find him just kind of, he always plays moody whiners that maybe it's not him I don't like as an actor. I just don't like the choice in characters that he repeatedly plays.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was bugging me halfway through the movie. It's like, because I don't follow actors very much, and but it was a face I recognized. It's like, where do I know him from? Dead Poet Society.
Stuff, yeah.
It was Dead Poet Society that I. So yeah, but this is, like I say, this was a good movie. I would love to see a sequel to this. To be honest, when you get done there, I have all these questions, much less, you know, yay for the way it ended. It did end with, to some extent, you know, a nice bow at the end. But part of me still wants to know, like, okay, how did he do in space? And he was supposed to be up there for a year. What happened when he got back? I mean, like, when he get back, did he live through it? Did he die up there? Did he get arrested when he get back? I mean, if you wanted to play those games, you could, you know, go on forever with, you know, sequel potential. But again, on the flip side, you get to the end of the movie and it's the end of the story. It's mm-hmm. not, it doesn't leave you totally hanging going, oh my God, I can't believe they didn't answer that question.
If you take this movie beyond where it ends, I don't see how there's any way there's a happy ending to this story.
No, not at all.
Like, it ends at the happiest point that it can, because he's going to be found out. There's no way around that.
Yeah, like, because now, once he's in space, he's got no backup. You know, he can't pack that many bags of urine along, you know? Yeah. And I don't know, maybe once they're up in space, they don't check. You made the cut, you're in, you're good, you know?
Well, they're going to notice he's myopic and, you know.
Right.
There's no way you can hide that when you're living in close proximity with other people.
Yep. But once he's up there, what are they going to do? You know, shove him out the
Well, yeah, lock? Yeah, but it's not the fact of what's happening when he's up there. He's only away for a year.
Right, that's
what happens when he comes back.
That's my point, too. He'll probably, if he lives through the year, I mean, maybe his heart actually does give out in space.
See, and that raises another point of, like, well, should people be screening for, should the NASA be screening for heart problems? Of course they should.
Yeah, I believe they do.
Yeah.
You put people in a centrifuge or underwater for a while, you're going to find heart problems.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, I think the movie's making the point that he is genetically predisposed to a heart problem.
Right.
But he doesn't have one, and that's what they were screening him out for. I'm like, that's reasonable.
Yeah, his heart did act up one time when he was on a treadmill.
Yeah.
But that was stress,
you know. I had some issues with that. Because, like, that goes back to the whole nature versus nurture thing. Like, if I'm sure the other guy who's sitting in a wheelchair and really probably not doing much to stay fit, well, you could take somebody who's been overweight for years, who just says, I'm going to change my life, and starts eating better and gets healthy and runs and runs and run, and they will dramatically improve their physical fitness.
Yeah.
Not in a fake way, but in a real tangible way.
Yep.
So, yeah, this idea that this guy who you know, we never see doing anything physical other than the one time he gets on the treadmill on his wheelchair, that he's just automatically more physically fit because he's genetically predisposed to it, that's not true either.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why, like, this is one of those movies where I'm fine with not taking it really at face value on stuff like that, because they're not trying to be realistic. Like, the whole portrayal of the cars and the way people dress and all that, they're trying to convey ideas, and that's the way I took it. You can't really just look at that whole scene on the treadmill and take that at face value, because it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, like a lot of this movie, things happened to make a point. You know, they were kind of pushing that whole genetic predisposition thing, you know, and to make a point.
Well, yeah, and to their credit, it wasn't a heavy-handed. I mean, they weren't, like, pointing it in one direction or another. What they were saying was, here is a society where we do this, And, you know, you look at, you know, basically what three characters, the two brothers and the Jude Law's character and Uma Thurman's character. So you got four people there. Basically, you look at their lives, but it's not like, you know, the bigger picture there. It's just like here's a slice and they're not trying to, you know, make societal judgments based on this. They're just saying here's what might happen if you have a system set up like this, and let's discuss it or something to that effect.
Yeah, this is a good, like I say, I like this movie a lot. I didn't expect to, I didn't know much about it, but it does have some real good sci-fi topics, things that, you know, repeatedly come up in science fiction and deals with them in a very specific way and pushes it, you know, to its limits, I suppose you could argue, you know, in order to make a point. And I think it does a good job of making a point. You know, it's got a message and things that it wants you to think about, and it works because I'm still thinking about them. So there you go. But technology, any of the technology in the show that you guys saw that you might want?
The really the only technology. Well, I guess there was the electric cars, but like they don't really go into depth in much of anything, other than the whole implications of the genetic stuff.
Yeah.
And even the genetic part of it, they weren't really going in a lot of detail about how it worked or anything like that. It was really just the ramifications of making decisions based on people's genetic background.
I could argue there's a lot of tech in here that I don't want.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want their office.
No.
Yeah, no, there's nothing about that office that I would not be able to work there.
You notice none of them had pictures. There was nothing personal. No, not even one. Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out why they took out the trash. There was no paper. I mean, there was no what are you going to throw out?
Yeah,
I'm like, yeah. Basically, well, the desks were kind of cool. I will give them that. They were kind of these curved desks, but they had kind of this surface. But then there was a computer monitor kind of embedded in the middle of it, and only one, which right there means I can't work there. and that was it. And
I thought it was funny when Gore Vidal's character commented on how clean he kept his workstation. Yeah. Well, yeah, you'll look at the rest of these people. There's just a pigsty around here.
Right, yeah.
Everybody was
there's not
exactly
a
the
doggone
same.
Bit of dust anywhere. Yeah. I mean, seriously, when they went through for the murder investigation, they had a hard time coming up with. I mean, oh my God, they found a spare eyelash in the whole frickin' place.
Well, did you catch the joke in there? The FBI people were called Hoovers.
Yeah, I did hear that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I caught that one. I thought it was kind of semi-cute. So,
which in every other country means vacuum cleaner.
Right.
So, yep, there you go. Okay. Well, okay, we don't necessarily like the parameters of the universe, and we're not seeing a lot of tech here we want to like, but we still like the movie. So there you go. Anyway. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Doc. You can check us out at scifitechdoc.com, where there's cool space junk available for purchase. You can pop into the forums on the website and take part in conversation there regarding this movie or anything else. You can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have ideas or comments, you can send them to greetings@scifitechtalk.com. And of course, reviews on iTunes are always welcome. Jeff, where can people find you?
People can follow me on Twitter at Bronco Sire. That's S-Y-E-R.
And Mike, how about you?
I can be found on Twitter at DSC Chipman, and I have my about.me page at about.me/MikeMcPeak. And you can also check me out over on Geekiest Show Ever. And I wanted to throw a plug in there because Mark Greentree, my co-host on there, said that Gattaca was one of his favorite movies, and he was kind of excited to hear that we were doing that. But
sweet.
Yeah, so, but if you want to, you know, check in on all things geeky from, we talk from toilets to computers to whatever strikes our fancy, come over and check us out at geekiestshowever.com.
Sounds good. And next, I can be found, wait a minute, I forgot about myself. I can be found on Twitter as well, at Julie Kuehl, JulieKuehl. And links to my other blogs, podcasts, and whatever else I might have going on can be found at about.me/JulieKuehl. Next week, we're going to be covering the movie, Dark Matter. Movie? TV show? TV show? Movie? I can't remember. Dark Matter. But basically, it's about a 6-person crew of a derelict spaceship that awakens from stasis in the farthest reaches of space. Their memories are wiped clean. They have no recollection of who they are or how they got on board. The only clue to their identities is a cargo bay full of weaponry and a destination, a remote mining colony that is about to become a war zone. With no idea whose side they're on, they face a deadly decision. Will these amnesiacs turn their backs on history, or will their pasts catch up with them? So that's it for this show, and we'll see you in the future.
Where do matter matter? It's the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.